Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Welcome to the CrunchZone.com podcast. And it's been a really busy week, and my name is Mark Blankenbaker. I'm at U of L Sheriff 50. I'm normally joined by Mike Lindsay at Crumbs Revenge on Twitter, and it has been a really crazy 2 weeks, actually, since our last CrunchZone.com podcast, and Louisville's in the ACC. Russ Smith's been drafted. There's a lot going on in the football program. Today, Mike is off-site. He's going to be interviewing Rocco Gasparo, U of L football's SID. I'm here at the headquarters, and I will be interviewing all-time leading scorer for U of L football, Art Carmody, and Lou Groser Award winner. So we're really excited about that. It's the Crunch Zone, and it's coming to you right now.
Topic of the week.
Okay, you know, the biggest news since, you know, probably in the history of Louisville athletics is that Louisville is now an ACC member. It happened on July 1st. You know, there was a big display at 4th Street Live for the fans. There was a huge press conference at Howard Schnellenberger's facility at Papa John's Cardinal Stadium. And I think it's really fitting that it actually happened in Howard Schnellenberger's football complex at Papa John's Cardinal Stadium. It's kind of ironic in a lot of different ways, the fact that, you know, Howard left Louisville because it was joining Conference USA. He wanted to remain independent. And now if, you know, obviously Howard is much older and retired from football now, but he obviously would have been applauded the move to the ACC. And, you know, it was a sad day when Howard left. Everybody understood it. He felt strongly that way. But the future of college football really was being in a conference, and ultimately one of the five conferences that stand today. And Louisville's got the last chair in the musical chairs of conference realignment, and they found that chair in the ACC. And, you know, it was a great day. Tom Jurich couldn't have been happier. He said it was the biggest day that he could remember in his time as the athletic director in the ACC. So, huge day. It's gonna cement the future of the every program: football, basketball, women's basketball, baseball, all the Olympic sports. I mean, I could go on, for volleyball to field hockey to soccer, men's and women's. I mean, it really does. It puts Louisville on a pedestal big time in terms of exposure, in terms of money, in terms of just having respect nationally and being able to recruit nationally. If you think of everything that Louisville's done since its time in athletics, it's done it without the benefit of being in a major conference. That hurts you in your pocketbook, but it also hurts you ultimately in recruiting. And, you know, if you're going up against Louisville now and you're Cincinnati, the differences are vast. Are the campuses that much different? No. But the competition and the facilities and things like that are going to continue to just become a larger and larger divide. And the Louisville and the ACC is such a huge deal. It allows the football program to have an opportunity to make a serious run at a college football national championship, which in the past has always been sort of a Great White Buffalo, you know, a big pipe dream. Everybody says it's the collision course. And I think a lot of people, especially when West Virginia beat out the Cards to go to the Big 12, they didn't really believe in the collision course anymore. It was something that was just more of an idea. And I think now, being in the ACC, having Bobby Petrino back in the saddle is super exciting. And I just can't wait to see what the future of Louisville football holds in the ACC. Tom Jurich was super excited. John Swofford, the commissioner of the ACC, was in attendance, and he brought with him 14 of the ACC mascots along to be there with Louis the Cardinal. And it was a really great day. There was confetti. There was a Maker's Mark bottle with John Swofford's face on it. And it was just all around just sort of it was a landmark day. And, you know, the landmark day really came back in November of 2012 But, you know, today it's official, or on July 1st it was official, and you can see the updated standings on ESPN, and ACC Media Day is coming up in 2 weekends, and I'm going to travel down to Greensboro, North Carolina, and basically get a ton of interviews and really fill out the ACC and learn a lot about the other schools. And it's a big, big deal, and I know there's going to be a lot of Louisville questions, so excited to get down to Greensboro and see what the ACC is all about. What I've seen so far has been a lot of fun. It's nice to not be in a lame duck conference. So, you know, that's huge. Transitioning into the NBA, Russ Smith was selected in the second round with the 47th pick by the Philadelphia 76ers and was then traded to the New Orleans Pelicans. And that was a big deal. And there's a really, really great story up on the Courier-Journal about how much the New Orleans Pelicans really wanted Russ Smith. And they actually traded for him. They traded Pierre Jackson to the 76ers, who unfortunately Pierre Jackson's already suffered a pretty bad injury to his lower leg. I think it was an Achilles injury. But so 76ers have more health problems, and Russ Smith is in New Orleans, which is a pretty loaded backcourt. But I really do encourage you to read Adam Himmelsbach's column about how Russ Smith became a Pelican on the Courier-Journal. It's really interesting. Russ basically nailed his interview with the New Orleans Pelicans, and they had to have him. He endeared himself to the Pelicans like he endeared himself to Cardinal fans for 4 years. Super excited for Russ. Can't wait to see what he does in Summer League. Peyton Siva already is endearing himself to the Pistons, and he's already wowing folks in the Summer League. Definitely want people to go and keep up with Peyton's progress in the NBA Summer League. He's had two pretty outstanding showings so far, and you know, he's got another one as I'm recording this, so I'm excited to see what he does. And Gorgui Dieng's about to get going with the T-Wolves organization, and we know that Luke Hancock is with the Orlando Magic with Shane Bohannon. Samardo Samuels is with Russ in New Orleans. Also Kyle Keurig's out in LA with the Clippers, and not actually in LA, but he's playing as a member of the Clippers organization and their summer league team. So we're gonna keep an eye on all that, and best of luck to everybody. It's gonna be a lot of fun to watch, you know, Russ in the NBA, and you know, see how Gorgui can really build on the strong finish that he had to his rookie season. You know, we're going to talk to Art Carmody here in a little bit, a lot about football, and I'm really looking forward to that. But one of the highlights that came out of the 4th Street Live ACC celebration was that the Miami game, the opener, will be a blackout. Bobby Petrino had Lorenzo Malden and Jake Smith up on the stage in their black uniforms with their black helmets, and they look amazing. And it's going to be a blackout, and the fans are encouraged to wear black. The black is back. The Cards are back in the black, and it's going to be a lot of fun to you know, see that and have the energy in Papa John's Cardinal Stadium on Labor Day. Monday Night Football crew, there's no NFL Labor Day. It's going to be agonizing just sitting around and watching football starting on Thursday of the opening week of college football and not being able to see my Cards until, of course, you know, Labor Day, the final game of the weekend, and then we get to see the rematch of the Russell Athletic Bowl. The University of Louisville also released a bunch of changes to his roster. They didn't really tell you what the changes were, but you had to go in and find them. We did that for you on thecrunchzone.com, and we went and found all the new players: James Sample, Pat Thomas, Tyler Ferguson, Shaq Williams, all the players that we've been keeping you up to date on the internet, on our website, thecrunchzone.com. We've been highlighting some number changes that were important. Michael Dyer's wearing number 5, Teddy Bridgewater's number 5. Some big shoes to fill wearing that number, but a lot of people have that number 5 jersey, so a lot of folks are going to become de facto Michael Dyer fans, and I think he will give a whole lot of people reason to cheer for him this year. And then, you know, you have just some other guys like Lynn Clark. He's changed from 14 to 54. I really think a lot of him. Pedro Sibia has changed his number from 96 to 73 as he moves from the defensive line to the offensive line. Now, one really, really interesting one, though, is James Hearns, linebacker, changed his number from 21 to 99. That's not the only thing that's changed about James Hearns. He had the second largest weight increase on the team. He has gone all the way up to 6'3", 272 pounds. This is a guy that when he showed up was a 225. And so in 1 year, he's up to 272. And you got to wonder, is he going to stick at linebacker? Is he fast enough? Can he still play linebacker? Is he going to be the hybrid? Or where does James Hearns fit after his redshirt freshman season? Another redshirt freshman, the biggest weight gainer is Johnny Dejon Richardson. He gained 49 pounds. Now he's 6'3", 334 pounds. I think part of the reason why he jumped so much in his weight gain is because we didn't have an accurate measurement for his weight when he first arrived on campus. But some of the useful guys that I think, you know, we are really going to see some benefits from the University of Louisville will is Dominic Brown. He gained 17 pounds. Now he's 6'2", 233 pounds. Charles Gaines, 16 pounds. He's up 16 pounds. Now he's 5'11", 190. James Quick, he's up 14. Now he's 6'1", 185. And there's some really, really nice, changes to these guys' bodies, and those guys will be playing key positions for the University of Louisville this year. Some great weight losses. BJ DeBose, he's down 19 pounds. He's 6'5", 268. That's perfect for him. Skylar Lacey at some point will factor into the offensive line rotation. He's now 6'6", 305 pounds after losing 15 pounds. And one weight gainer that's also really, really encouraging was Aaron Epps. This is a guy who came in. He's always been a really big guy, 6'7", and he started as a Cardinal at 245 pounds. And they've played him at tight end. They've always wanted him at offensive line. Now he actually has the frame to compete and to provide depth or even potentially push for a starting position at offensive tackle. So that's a lot of fun to watch. Really looking forward to see what Aaron Epps can bring to the table. And, just with football, a lot of things are coming around. I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun to see this schedule and also to see the pros. Teddy Bridgewater's wowing folks up in Minnesota. North Turner says that he is further along than he expected him to be. And right now, I would expect Matt Castle to start game one. He's a veteran. He's a serviceable veteran. But it's going to be hard to keep Teddy Bridgewater on the bench. He is phenomenal. We've all seen him for 3 years, and we know exactly what he's able to do. And he's joined in the NFL with a contract for Hakeem Smith. Hakeem, 4-year starter, signed a 3-year, $1.53 million deal with the Tennessee Titans. He was awesome when he was a Cardinal. He's a four-year starter, like I said. He's also a four-time All-Conference selection. Made 3 Big East All-Conference teams, 1 American Athletic Conference All-Conference team, and he had 290 tackles, 5 forced fumbles, 3 fumble recoveries, 2 sacks, 4 interceptions, 22 passes defended during his career. And he was also a part of some really, really big-time defenses during his time here, including the number 1 defense in the country and the number 5 passing defense in the country last season. So, there's also a lot of watch list out there. Charles Gaines, Devontae Parker, Lorenzo Malden, Jake Smith, all these guys that have been named. They've been named to Gerald Christian. They're all named to the preseason watch list for the position, and that's really exciting. It's great recognition, but I just want to caution our fans and remind them that last two Heisman Trophy winners, 2012, Johnny Manziel. Nobody knew who Johnny Manziel was in July. Last year, Jameis Winston. Very few people knew who Jameis Winston was in July of last year. These are now two household names. Cam Newton's another one that came on strong. Actually visited Louisville when Charlie Strong first came to the U of L. So there's, but nobody really remembers that or really cares to ever mention that Cam Newton was actually on campus and would have played his only season instead of Auburn at Louisville had he committed, which of course he didn't. And has gone on to a fantastic career and a Heisman Trophy. But I think it's just it's exciting off-season time. There's not a lot of games. There's not a lot of activity. One other thing that we did since we last had a podcast was Crum's Revenge had an outstanding year in review, you know, year in sports 2014 video. We worked really hard on it. He did. I'm sorry, I can't. I really shouldn't say we as a website. We did, but it was really just Mike. I helped him find a few clips here and there, and just for the future, we're going to try to incorporate more sports in there. This time, we added a lot of volleyball. We added a lot more baseball than we typically have in the past. We're excited about everything that's going on at the University of Louisville. And I think the year in sports really kind of highlighted a lot of what was great about sort of a anticlimactic season for U of L. A lot of fans are sort of not really in tune with the schedule. They weren't really excited about it. But when you think about it, U of L was one play away from being undefeated in football. They were, you know, they had a huge lead against Kentucky in the Sweet 16. Only needed a couple plays to go their way in that game. They didn't play that well in Omaha, but they had a great run to get there. If they had played the way they baseball had played the way that they had played the entire season, you know, that would have been a different story. And women's basketball, if Shoni Schimmel hits the game winner against Maryland in the Elite Eight, they go to another Final Four. You did win a national championship in swimming. Of course, the Spirit Squads dominated again. You had 14 conference championships, a lot of pro contracts. There was a lot of really good things. And I think Mike's Crum's Revenge's year in sports video really highlighted that. You can find that on thecrunchzone.com. And, you know, I'm really excited about it. I'm really proud of him. I'm excited to do it again and keep moving forward. But now, you know, I think that's just quick program updates to start the show. But now I think we need to get to our interviews. So why don't we get to Mike's conversation with U of L SID, Rocco Gasparo.
One-on-one.
Rocco, thanks for joining us.
No problem. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. So I would like to know a little bit more about the role that you play. Everyone sees you around. They know you're a man behind the scenes, but you're controlling a lot of stuff, what goes on with the media, with the coaching. What is a day like for a sports information director? And I guess we'll talk about summer since we're in summer right now.
Well, I guess the exciting thing about it is every day is something different. You never know when you walk into your office. You know, you have things you need to get done on a day-to-day basis, but you just never know what can pop up from a story that somebody has, or you know, an award or something that a player might get, or somebody gets in trouble. You just don't know what each day is going to be like. But in the summer, it's kind of our slow time. Most of June, I finished the media guide, getting ready for the next season. So publishing the 2014 media guide, I put that thing to bed about the 15th of June. Now I'm just kind of, you know, getting ready for the upcoming season, working on game notes, getting those ready to go, game program, updating the website. So just kind of doing some day-to-day busy work in preparation for the 2014 football season.
And what's that like? So obviously we're joining a new conference. So you probably, I mean, I don't know if you start from scratch on every team, but it seems like you have a whole new slate of teams. So it almost seems like maybe even more work with your game notes and things like that.
Yeah, you're working with a whole new different set of teams that you haven't, probably hadn't played in a while. Obviously, we played Miami at the end of the last season, but some of the other schools that we played, Wake Forest, you know, Syracuse, we've played. But that's not really that much of a big deal. It's just more of getting used to a new conference, how they do things. Obviously, there's much more demand being in the ACC than there was in the Big East or the Conference USA from a media standpoint. You know, we have our own blogger from ESPN that, you know, follows us pretty closely and expects us to take care of them on, you know, not on a day-to-day basis, but, you know, typically on a weekly basis, we'll supply them with interviews or whatever else they might ask. So, you know, it's just more of a demand being in the ACC than maybe in some other conferences.
Yeah, and that's a good thing for U of L fans, and maybe harder for your day-to-day. I did see a Gerald Christian article on ESPN this week, so I guess that's all part of that exposure increase. But tell us a little bit about your path to Louisville, because I understand there's a couple interesting turns, including a short stay with an ACC school.
Yeah, You know, I went to grad school in East Rosser, Pennsylvania, where I got my master's degree in sports administration. And from there, I got my first, I had to do a couple internships. I did one at Wisconsin, Milwaukee, and then I did another one with the Cleveland Browns in public relations. Then I got my first break into the field. And I was the sports information director at Northwest Missouri State, which was a Division II school in Maryville, Missouri, which is a very good football school. So it's kind of where I got my start in football. They were a playoff team when I was there, the 2 years that I was there. And then from there, I went to be the head FID at Youngstown State. I worked for Coach Tressel for 3 years, played in two national championships in football, and was also, the FID for the entire department.
Now, from there, let me jump in real quick, just because you just threw that out casually. But for our listeners, that's Jim Tressel, the old Ohio State football coach.
Yeah, Coach Tressel, Ohio State coach. He got in a little bit of trouble, but
well, very successful before that.
Yeah, but super guy. I don't really necessarily believe everything that was all his fault, but I just think some things got away from him there. But great guy, obviously a terrific coach, and very fortunate to work for him for 3 years, and then was the SID at NC State for a year doing football. Went to Dartmouth College for 2 years and did a bunch of different sports there. We had 35 sports, so we were all kind of doing different sports. And then was fortunate to get the opportunity to come here in 2003 and been here ever since.
Now, I know that, you know, I don't know how your staff compares now with the overall department from, you know, you've been here a long time, and Louisville's done a lot of growing. So, I mean, has there been a lot of staff changes to bulk up or even consider that for the ACC, or are you all just going to see kind of how you handle it and if there's pains and maybe address them then?
No, we're very well staffed and have been for the last few years. Tom gives us the resources in every department to be successful. So we're very well staffed compared to other ACC schools. So I think we'll just probably go into the league with what we have and probably see where we're at, maybe from a video standpoint, or maybe some other facets of our job, and see where we stack up. But right now, from an SID standpoint, we go in the league just as resources as anybody else in the ACC.
That's great. Now, you've seen a lot of football coaches. I know you can't tell the deepest, darkest, intimate secrets, but I mean, of all the coaches, who have been some of the most demanding coaches to work for? Because I'm sure they all have their different quirks and their different things that they want to have done. And even you've worked, I mean, this is Petrino coming back, so we'll talk about that. But of all the coaches, who are some of the toughest ones as far as meticulous with the things that they wanted?
Obviously Coach Petrino. Coach Petrino is meticulous in everything he does within the whole program. He has his hand more so now than he did before, maybe the first time he was here, on everything within the program. I'm not saying he didn't have it before, but I just think where he was at Arkansas and, the man in the SEC, that he understands everything from marketing to sports information to tickets to compliance to academics more so now than he did when the first time he was here. But that happens when he was a young coach, obviously, when he first got here. So, we've all learned a lot over the years, but he's probably the most demanding coach that I've ever worked for. He just expects you to work hard and do your job, which has been good for me with him coming back the second time, because he relies on me or to give him advice on how to handle certain situations, which, in my position that means a lot to me, because obviously that means that he believes in what I'm telling him, and he wants us to help him get through some certain situations. So it's been a great having him back here heading into this year.
And is there any big surprises with the ACC as far as football? We got the great schedule, but is there, you mentioned maybe an uptick in media coverage. Is there anything else that maybe the fans should get excited about with the ACC from a football perspective?
Just some of the places you're gonna have the opportunity to go visit. Clemson's gonna be a neat experience. Going to Notre Dame, well, not in the ACC, but, you know, we'll be playing them every, I think we play them again in 2017, I think, or something. So we'll be playing them. You know, there'll be people coming here from a fan standpoint that, you know, maybe some places didn't bring more than 100 people to our games. Well, now Florida State's going to bring a couple thousand people. NC State's probably going to bring a couple thousand people. So we'll see more of a visiting team crowd, which will be exciting. We don't want to give away our tickets, but, you know, it'd be good to have, you know, some big crowds from a visiting standpoint coming into our stadium and adding a little bit of atmosphere to it as well.
Now, we know Tom loves to build things. We know the interest in the football program. I mean, based on last year's attendance alone, it's an all-time high with more visitors coming to try to take up some seats. I know there's been some designs kicked around. What's going on as far as the potential expansion plans?
Yeah, I don't really know. I know there's been some initial feasibility studies, but I think we're a long way away from, you know, from anything happening. Obviously, you know, fundraising would be a big key. So, you know, that's something they've looked at, but, you know, I'm not real sure on where things are right now. But obviously, with the increase in attendance and visibility and some of the teams coming in, that's definitely something that obviously Tom's going to look at here in the next year or two.
Okay, now I know you're busy, so I won't keep you too long, but I've got one really important question for you. Since you're from Cleveland, what's going to happen with LeBron James?
I don't know. I'm holding my breath. I'm not getting anything done right now, and there's nothing to get done right now because I keep looking at Twitter to see if anything's breaking. I hope he comes back. I really do. At first, I didn't really want him to come back, but I think it'd be great for the city. Anything that's good for the city of Cleveland is good for me. So I think it'd be great for the city. It'd be great for the Cavs and the organization. Bring a lot of attention to the city instead of from a negative standpoint like they usually get. So I think if he comes back, it really mean a lot because I think that would mean that he really wants to bring a championship to Cleveland, which I think is important to him and his family and his legacy. I think if he brings a championship to Cleveland, no matter what else he does in his career, that could be the stamp on everything he's done because Cleveland's just been waiting so long for anything positive from a sports history. And if he can bring a championship to Cleveland, he could do anything he wanted from now till he dies, and he'd be the king more so now than he ever would be.
Does he need to do this or at least come back to Cleveland just to say, I'm sorry for the whole last debacle?
He gave all that money
to charity, but he made it in such a way where everyone was angry.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't have to say. If he wanted to do what he wanted to do and go to Miami, he could have just did it like every other sports figure in the history of the world did and just, you know, signed his contract and showed up at Miami. He didn't have to, you know, embarrass the city of Cleveland and go on there and just taking his talents to South Beach. But, you know, sometimes you're young, you make mistakes, or you have people around you that think that this is the best idea. Yeah, there was some charity involved, but, you know, he could take $2 million out of his pocket and give it to the kids and then not be affected. I know it's easy for me to say, but $2 million for him is probably not that big of a deal, especially when you're looking for some tax write-offs. But, you know, he did what he did, and I think he's sorry. But, you know, the biggest thing, the bigger issue, too, is the letter that Dan Gilbert wrote about LeBron when he left. I don't know if LeBron can forgive him, forget that. And that's a big thing when somebody calls you a coward and, you know, calls you out like that. So I don't know. There's some fence mending that needs to happen on both sides. But I say if LeBron has the pride for the city of Cleveland that I think he does, or in Akron, then I think he will come back.
Well, it sounds like he needs a good guy in his corner like Bobby Petrino has, which is you. We're going to go ahead and tie that one in there. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll look forward to seeing you on the sidelines this year, and we'll get ready for an exciting year in the ACC.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, now we're joined with Art Carmody. He's a Lou Groza winner, Lou Groza Award winner, apologies, and also U of L football's all-time leading scorer and record for field goals made. Art, how are you?
Doing great, Mark. Thanks for having me on. Big fan of what you do and have listened to your podcast before, your interviews, and been looking forward to this.
Oh, yeah, man. We've been wanting to have you on for a while, and I told Comes Revenge, Mike Lindsay, I said, you know, I really want to get Art in the summertime when everybody's thinking football, and, you know, and here we are, and we're going to hit up a lot of Bobby Petrino folks over the course of the summer. You were my first call. Yeah. how excited are you to get Bobby Petrino back at the University of Louisville?
I think it's a combination of things. One, getting him back is huge, just because I thought it was the right move at the time. You know, people have their different opinions about Bobby Petrino. I love him. You know, he gave me an opportunity when no other schools were really going to give me an opportunity to play college football. He gave me a scholarship when, you know, I was an untested freshman. And just, you know, what he brings from his coaching experience, his X's and O's, his play calling, and you combine that with the schedule that we finally have in the ACC. It takes me back to when we initially joined the Big East and how excited we were about that schedule. And now it's, you multiply that times 100 with the schedule that's in front of us now. And I think he's the right guy to lead us into that. He's got the SEC experience. He's got NFL experience. He really knows how to push his players' buttons and get the absolute best out of them. And I'm really looking forward to seeing really what he does in year one. Do I have high expectations? Do I think we're going to go undefeated and win the national title? No, but I think that we're going to be competitive in every game. I think we're going to be in every game at some point, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And I think the fans are really going to enjoy the switch from a defensive-minded staff back towards an offensive-minded staff.
Absolutely. And when people think of Bobby Petrino, they always think of points. And as a kicker, you certainly get to put up a lot of points for him. And you put up 341 during your career as a Cardinal. Did your leg ever get tired going out for all the extra points and field goals and things like that?
No, but I will say this. I did a good job of one benefit I had was redshirting in 2003 under Nate Smith, who was a great kicker, great guy. And I really just learned from him and saw how he went about preparing himself each week and how he and he was a baseball guy. So he kind of taught me the analogy. A kicker's a lot like a pitcher. You got to take care of your leg just like you take care of your arm, because it does have the possibility of getting dead at some point during the season or late in the season. So he really taught me how to maintain, get in the cold tub, all that kind of stuff to take care of your body and so that it can last a full season. So I was always prepared for the Petrino offenses and the Petrino practices. Leg never got tired. I always enjoyed being a part of the offense. I felt like I was part of the offense, like Paul Petrino and Bobby Petrino made me feel like I was a part of their group because I scored points, and that was always kind of a nice feeling to have, because I wasn't an isolated specialist. I felt part of the offense.
Well, maybe one of the reasons why you felt part of the offense because you had one of the most unique holders in college football, and Harry Douglas. And he's an Atlanta Falcon now. What's it like watching football on Sunday and seeing your old holder out there, catching passes from Matt Ryan?
I love it, and it's not just because it's a former Cardinal and a former teammate on the field. It's just truly a genuinely great guy that has not only taken an NFL or gotten an NFL opportunity, but made the most of it. He's had a great career in Atlanta. You know, he's a hometown kid there, but he's just one of those all-around great guys that you gravitate to from day one of arriving on campus as a freshman. He was the personality. He was the guy. I mean, he was one of the smallest guys on the team, but he had that presence. He just had that aura about him. And really, you know, with him being my holder for 3 years, got Stephon my first year, and then they threw Harry out there because they wanted the option of the fake, which we only ran one fake our entire time, and we all got humbled on that, which we can get to that story later on if you want. But the fact that he was always willing to go the extra mile whenever I needed him to. If he'd had a long practice or even in the summer, long day of conditioning and then 7-on-7, he would stay as long as I needed him to stay afterwards to work on snap and hold and to build that chemistry that we would take throughout, you know, the season and then through the next, you know, 3 years of our career together. And so just seeing him in the NFL and his success and how he's stayed humble and stayed hungry. And, you know, he's one of the few guys, him and Mike Rutherford called me on my birthday last year. Guys don't really do that. And for him to take the time to do that just shows you the kind of character the guy that he is.
Yeah, everybody loves Harry Douglas. I'd like to hear about that fake fumble and what your take on was on that.
Yeah, well, it was actually a fake that was developed the year before with Stephon and Nate Smith, and they ran it against TCU, and Stephon scored a touchdown. So I don't know if you remember that play, but it's an option with the kicker and the holder, and the call comes in from the sidelines, and if the look is there, Harry had the option to audible out of it, but we had the look, and it was blocked and ran to perfection. All I had to do was catch the ball and pretty much run straight, and it would have been a guaranteed touchdown. That was the disappointing part of watching it on film later, is seeing how well executed it was and how all I had to do was run, and Gary Barnes was plowing his guy into the back of the end zone, and I would have easily scored a touchdown. And all week in practice, and I always prided myself on being an athlete. I was a big baseball player growing up and, you know, tried to assimilate myself as an athlete. And so, like, during practice, I was one-handing these pitches from Harry and taking them no problem. Won the game, you know, Harry pitched it to me, and I took mine off the ball just for a split second and went off my hands, went out of bounds, fumbled, came back to the sidelines. Nobody was happy with me. And our strength coach, one of our assistant strength coaches, Tim Saha, put his arm around me. He goes, "Well, look on the bright side. We're never going to run that play ever again.
We're never going to run it again."
And we didn't.
You put it on film, it was ruined forever. Everybody was going to prepare for it, Art. So,
right.
Wow, that's a hell of a story. I'm sorry that sorry you didn't house that one.
No, it would have been great. Maybe it would have been a top 10 play on SportsCenter, but
it could have been.
No.
One of the things I was always confused about, and maybe you can shed some light on this, there's only been a handful of players ever that I just was so sure that they deserved an NFL opportunity, and it didn't seem like you got an honest NFL opportunity. I was wondering if you could maybe share with what happened after you left Louisville and what happened with your NFL chance.
Yeah, I mean, it's not you know, it's not a sore subject or anything. I mean, I was, you know, I had a great college football career, and I was very blessed to play for Mike Petrino, Steve Kragthorpe, and the Louisville football program, and it was a great 4 years. And in turn, I was invited to the NFL Combine, and went to the NFL Combine, and I went 15 for 15 on field goals with snap and hold, and so that was great. But you know, it's evidence based on, you know, my lack of kickoff ability in college. I didn't kick off a lot in college. I didn't have the NFL leg strength that you see some of these guys on Sundays just drive it through the back of the end zone. That wasn't a strength. It was one of those things, kind of like a pitcher that throws 98, 99 miles an hour. It's just something that you can't just develop over time. I mean, you know, I was use another baseball analogy, I was kind of the 89 to 90 mile an hour pitcher that gets guys out. I knew my leg strength, and I had the ability from about 55 and in on field goals to, you know, that's what I could do. But on kickoffs, it wasn't my strength. And at the time, coming out in 2008, they still kicked off from the 30. And in 2006, 2007, you had guys like Devin Hester and Josh Cribbs and these other returners who were just wreaking havoc on the NFL. So when me and the rest of the specialists got to the combine, there's a pretty big emphasis on these guys are dangerous. And it wasn't just the kickers, it was also the punters. You know, these guys are dangerous. We have to keep the ball away from them. And so they were looking for the guys that could either hang the ball up really high and, you know, put it, you know, right on the goal line, or the guys that could drive it out of the back of the end zone. Those weren't really my strengths. I was a good directional kickoff guy. I could put it in the corners, but I could hang it up there for maybe 4 seconds, but they're looking for, you know, if you're going to do that in the NFL, it needs to hang up there 4-3, you know, hang time on kickoffs. And that just wasn't me. So not being able to kick off really hurt my chances of getting a true, you know, NFL shot. And that happened. I got an opportunity to go to Tampa Bay for the rookie mini camps, and that just didn't work out. You know, they had Matt Bryant, he's still kicking in the NFL. And from that point on, I really didn't have any other opportunities. And then I played arena ball for 3 years here in Shreveport-Bossier, which was an absolute blast. But never after the NFL Combine and after, you know, the Tampa Bay thing, there was really no interest from NFL teams, and really it had to do with my kickoff ability. And Tom McMahon, who was our special teams coach at Louisville in 2006, who's still, you know, in the NFL coaching now, he had followed by Petrino to the Falcons. He told me straight up, kind of after the Combine, "Hey, this is what you do well, this is what you don't do well. And the bad part about what you don't do well is it's something that you really can't develop.
Change.
One thing,
yeah,
you could kick it, you know, 90 yards and we can teach you accuracy, but you can't teach leg strength and distance on kickoffs. And that's just something that's going to, he didn't say that I had no chance, but he said it's something that's going to hurt you going forward. And I appreciated
right.
the honesty, and I was kind of prepared for that. So it wasn't, you know, a total disappointment when NFL opportunities kind of came and went.
Absolutely. So the Greg Maddux of college football couldn't get an NFL chance. Well, always perplexed me. Glad to see kind of the inside from your perspective on why that didn't work. And but you brought him up, Devin Hester. You were in the 2004. You were obviously weren't the punter, but kind of curious to that game and the environment. Louisville opens with Miami this year. I'm kind of curious if you could kind of talk about both games, the 2004 game and the 2006 game with Miami that you participated in, and how big both of those games really were for both programs, our program.
Yeah, I mean, the 2004 game was one of those games you knew they were going to be good, and we knew it was a Thursday night ESPN game, and the way our schedule started out that year, we really kind of, not to be cocky or anything, we saw ourselves being 4-5-0 going into that game. Just that was just kind of the writing on the wall. I think it was like Kentucky, Army, North Carolina. I think the Tulane game got moved, and then East Carolina, and then Miami. And so we kind of looked at that. Okay, we're going to be 5-0 going into that game. They're probably going to be good. This is going to be a huge opportunity for us to see where we stand. And that team had so much leadership and senior leadership, that 04 team, that those guys really set the tone. And it was the whole couple weeks before that game, it was, we're not only going to go down there to play Miami, we're going to go down there and beat them. And that was the mindset we had going into that game. And, you know, it couldn't have started any better. And it's funny now, Brock Berlin, who's the quarterback of that Miami team, he's from Shreveport. And we work out at the same gym, or at least for the last couple of years, and we've talked about that game before. And real quick story on Brock Berlin, I mean, he grew up in a shotgun-style offense, and when they got behind, they put him in the shotgun-style offense that he grew up in and what he knew how to do, and they just started coming back. I mean, that really kind of played into their favor. I think if we had kind of kept it a little bit closer and not really jumped out on him, it might have been a little bit different game, because the Miami offense was built around Gore and all those guys. It really played into what Brock did well, and they came back and won. But the Devin Hester thing, gosh, for 2 weeks, that's all our special teams meetings were about. But you can't let this guy have a chance at all to touch the ball. Like, that was the goal. I mean, obviously on kickoff, you can't kick it out of bounds. You don't want to give Miami a good field position, but I really thought Todd Flannery did a great job that game of keeping the ball in the corner. And actually, his best kickoff of that game, Hester ran it back for a touchdown. It was like, I think he kicked it like 5 yards deep in the corner, and Hester somehow crossed field and ran it back for a touchdown, and I think it got called back. But the Moody situation was tough, because if you remember that game, he was instructed to kick the ball out of bounds pretty much every single time. Get it to the sidelines, kick it out of bounds. Well, if you go back and watch the film, his first punt, he's trying to kick it out of, or angle it to where it goes out of bounds, and he shanks it. It goes like, it's like a 15-yard punt. Mm-hmm. So from that point forward, and not to throw Brent under the bus here, but he came back to the sidelines and was like, screw this. I'm going to kick it. I'm going to try to get it out of bounds, but I'm not going to go as far to the sideline as I need to be. And if you watch the film, he got away with a lot of punts that night to Hester, to where our coverage guys just did a great job of getting down there and kind of keeping them bottled up, or keeping them from really, you know, getting in space where he could do damage. But we all know what happened on the last one. He tried to kick it to the sidelines, and he sometimes had a natural draw to his punt. He's left-footed. That thing came right back to the middle of the field, and that's the last place you want to give Devin Hester the ball, is the middle of the field with space, and the rest was history. I felt bad for Brent, because really, you know, he took a lot of blame for that, and ultimately he ended up transferring after the year, just because I think I really think that one game, you know, defined his Louisville career, and he ended up transferring to Florida State, where he punted for a little while, and he was a holder for them. But yeah, that Miami game in 04, it was a heartbreaking loss, but it was one of those losses that really springboarded us for the rest of the year, and that's kind of turning into the 2006 game. That was a game that we obviously had circled at the beginning of the year as a, hey, if we're going to win a national championship, we've got to go undefeated, and this is our first real test. We've got to get through this one. And that's another, that 2006 team had a lot of senior, and it had a lot of junior and senior leaderships. I mean, I was a junior. We had a lot of seniors that had played. And one thing about that 2006 team is, and really it was with Amobi Okoye. I mean, he really was a huge part of this, and that senior group was we met as a team, closed-door team meetings without coaches pretty much weekly during that season. And it was, I mean, if a practice did not go 100% how the team thought it should go, we had a closed-door team meeting each week where the seniors basically were like, hey, this isn't good enough. If we want to win a national championship, we've got to step it up tomorrow, and we can't take these teams lightly because we'll get beat. And so that 2006 team, was it as talented as 2004? I don't think so. I mean, really, that 2004 and 2005 teams might have been just as talented as the 2006 team. But that 2006 team, we just had a one-track goal set mind that we can win a national championship if we do everything in our power, which, as you know, was the case. We had it sitting there right in front of us. But that Miami game, just the whole way they came out, and they weren't any good. I think they knew they weren't any good, but they still wanted to try to use that swagger and intimidation to think they could, you know, that could get them some points in games. And as soon as they did that right at the beginning of the game, it was pretty much, I mean, the game was over. It was just when Mario took it to the house on that throw from Brian, and then we just, you know, the defense, the way that they just bottled them up, it was just a butt kicking from the start. It really wasn't a butt kicking from the start, but once we got that momentum on our side after they stomped on us and we went down and scored the first touchdown, or I'm sorry, we scored that touchdown to make it, I think, 10-7, it was pretty much, I mean, the game was over. We had them right where we wanted them. But that was just, I mean, that the 2006, the thing I really enjoyed about that season is, yeah, there was the Miami game, there's the West Virginia game, there's the Rutgers game, there's the Orange Bowl. But really, that team took it a week-by-week approach. And even after the Rutgers loss, we still took it a week-by-week approach. As in, let's finish the season right. We started it with these goals. These goals aren't attainable anymore, but we can still reach, you know, a Big East title, a BCS game if things fall right. And that's the way that team approached it. And that was a really fun thing to be a part of, was just the weekly grind and the weekly blinders that you had on, that this is the opponent, this is all our focus is going to be on. There was really no looking ahead. Even the Rutgers game, I mean, you know, you could say we looked ahead, but we really didn't. I mean, we went up there with the job to do, and it just didn't go our way that night. But that team was just a blast to be a part of, just because it was a weekly grind to get to reaching our goals, which it turned out great with the Big East Championship and the Orange Bowl.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, just going back to 2004 real quick and that Miami game, I have a picture that has Devin Hester running back a punt and Chad Rimsey trying to chase him from behind. And I always send that to Chad every time either Hester's on TV or Miami is, because, you know, I just gotta rub it in his, you know, I gotta rub it in a little bit. But my opinion, the 2004 team, best Louisville team in history, and I think it's just kind of evidence if you go back to that Miami game and you see how many pros are still playing from that team. It was a decade ago. You know, and players don't stick around in the NFL that long, and both teams had a lot of representation in the NFL from that. But I was wondering, you know, if you could just kind of explain, like, maybe where the program was in 2004, because you lost to Miami in 04, but you rose in the rankings. In contrast to what Louisville did this past season, they actually beat Florida International by like 70 and only allowed 26 yards of total offense and fell in the rankings. So kind of if you could just like try to encapsulate what it was like to be a Conference USA 2004 Louisville team that just lost to Miami and to what Louisville just experienced last year.
Yeah, the last year thing was just it was a weird dynamic, and it was and that's just the world I think we live in now, in the you know, the constant internet, Twitter, ESPN, million channels type thing. You know, in 2004, the 2003, you know, Petrino had kind of put his stamp on a program in 2003 that, hey, we're going to score a lot of points. We've got a lot of these guys coming back. And the 2004 team, and I think I really enjoyed about that team is you had the senior leadership, but you also had a lot of young guys that played, like myself, Gary Barnage, you know, Harry Douglas. There was just a lot of mixture of veterans and young guys. And we really weren't tested that season. If you go back and look at those games, obviously, you know, the Miami game, we lost, but we had a big lead, let that one go away. The Memphis game was kind of back and forth. It was one of those weird Thursday night games where it's back and forth and we ended up coming out on top. And then the Liberty Bowl against Boise State, which still after the distractions we had that week with the whole, you know, Petrino coaching thing going on, how we were able to come out and, you know, Petrino called a good game. We played a good game, and we came out, you know, with a huge win. That's still one of the most fun games that I was a part of. But I don't know. It was just one of those things where people knew we were going into the Big East going forward. We'd had success in 2003, and we were undefeated when we played Miami. And then even though we lost, we still rose, and then we kept rising because we kept winning throughout the season. I think it was just a perception thing. And then you looked at this past year, which was so frustrating. And also 2004, we were not only were we winning games, but we were either shutting teams out or beating them by 100. You know, this past year, we were winning, we're winning games and the games were never in doubt, but we weren't beating teams by, you know, 30 and 40 points like they were in 2004. Mm-hmm. So there was a perception that, you know, Louisville is not as good as, you know, their ranking should be. And that's just because, you know, anytime you've got the media and people talking, that's what happens. I thought this past Louisville team was a great team. You know, they had one slip up to a Central Florida team that was much better than we all thought they were. We can be honest now looking back. I mean, that Central Florida team is a good football team. And, you know, a game Louisville had that let slip away. And who knows if, you know, they would have won out, who we would have played in the bowl game or what would have happened. But it was a great Louisville team. I really don't think it was fair to Charlie Strong and those players. Because that's one thing I try to tell people, and you've been around the program a long time, Mark, is the players work so hard from the moment the season ends, from January to get to the next season, and then to grind through that season to finish off. And I always felt bad for the players that they were getting hammered in the media for doing their job. I mean, their job was to go out and win football games, and that's what they did. Were some prettier than others? Yeah, but I always felt bad for the players because they're the ones, and even the coaches too, they're the ones that are grinding every week, putting the game plans in, lifting weights, doing the conditioning, the film study, all the stuff you got to do to be successful. A lot of people see the finished product on the field on Saturdays. They don't know what goes into it, you know, during the week. Do I have any room to talk? No, because I was just a kicker. All I had to do was sit in a special teams meeting and be told, if I'm kicking off, don't kick it to this guy or kick it in the corner. And it was fun. We had to have special teams. We had the special teams test every Friday, not to get off subject, but, you know, Coach McMahon would give us these special teams tests. And it would be like, what is your assignment? And I would always fill out the same thing every week. Don't miss. Like that was
don't
my
miss.
Time. Yeah, don't miss. Now, that's all I do. I get the test. I'd say, don't miss, put it in my bag, and then give it to him at night. And eventually he figured out during the year I was just writing the same thing every time, and he made a sarcastic comment or he said something about it. But, but I mean, those are things like special teams tests, the position tests that guys would do every week. Like that stuff, people don't see, you know, that side of things. They just see the finished product on Saturday. So, yeah, the difference between the 04 and the 04 team and last year's team, I think it was just a perception thing. I mean, we were a team on the rise, and even though – Louisville was going into the ACC, I think, you know, we were just kind of stuck in that purgatory of the AAC conference, and what is it? Nobody really knew. You know, unless you're a college football junkie, nobody really pays attention to it. So it was just kind of one of those things we were stuck with for the season. And then once we lost to Central Florida, it just people want to know part of it.
Absolutely. We're talking to Art Carmody, Lou Groza Award winner, all-time leading scorer at University of Louisville football. Art, what are you doing now? Who are you hanging out with?
Who am I hanging out with?
Yeah, who do you keep in touch with the most from your playing days?
Oh, well, obviously Brian Brom. He was my college roommate. Him and Justin Dealey were my two best friends from college. And Brian, I keep in touch with him a lot. I was just in his wedding a few months ago, which was a great time being around him and, like, Eric Wood and Breno and Mario and those guys. It's always great when you're around former teammates. Brian, you know, Harry every now and then. That's the one thing that, you know, as you get older, and I'm not in Louisville as much as I would like to be, obviously be down in Louisiana, but you don't, other than, like, you know, the every now and then the Twitter mentions or a Facebook message or something like that, you're not in touch with guys as much as you'd like to be. Like, I mean, you mentioned Chad Rimsey. I mean, he was one of my favorite teammates, you know, from college. And a quick story about that class. Football is a game, and I did not get emotional. I mean, even after the Rutgers game, I mean, it was crushing, but I didn't cry after the game or anything like that. There was one time in my Louisville career that I cried after a football game, and that was after the 2005 or 2006 Gator Bowl. And it was really just that senior class, that group of guys had kind of really, you know, invited me in in 2003 as a freshman, and it was the Chad Rimsey's and the Travis DeFew, Jason Spitz, all those guys. And at the end of that game, Coach Petrino made all the seniors line up, and all the other players, we had to go and shake all of the seniors' hands and thank them for what they had done to help build the program to the point where we were playing, you know, in a game like the Gator Bowl. And they set the foundation for us to play in the Orange Bowl the next season. We had to shake their hands. And seeing guys like Chad and Brandon Johnson and Spitz and LeFew and those, and knowing I wasn't going to be playing with them anymore and not, you know, grinding through the week and doing all, you know, messing around with them in the weight room and all that kind of stuff. Like, that really hit me, and I went back to my locker, and I just put a towel over my head and started crying because those guys meant so much to build the program. And, you know, they came in 2001, 2002, when, you know, people thought the program could go to the next level and to the new heights, and they were able to do that. They were able to build that with Coach Petrino in 03 and 04 and 05 to really kind of get things going. We took a step back, obviously, in 2007. That's another story. But at that moment, those guys had done so much to build that program for the guys like me and Brian and Harry to take it over in 06 and 07 and try to keep things going.
Yeah, I actually remember that Gator Bowl locker room. Not that I was in it, but I remember Chad coming out to the buses afterwards, and he was definitely super upset. So I can definitely, even though I wasn't in that locker room, I can definitely imagine what it was like just based on my experience with him.
It was a great gesture, and I'm glad Coach Petrino did that because those guys deserved to be thanked by the underclassmen.
Catch, so you're in Shreveport now, and what are you doing?
I'm in commercial banking. I've been doing that for the last 5 years. I was with J.P. Morgan Chase for a long time. I was working for them in Florida for a year, and then got an opportunity to come back to my hometown, and I'd actually tried to get back to Louisville. That didn't go as planned for me, so I ended up coming back to Shreveport. That's another story for another time. But back here, I'm doing, you know, commercial banking. Been doing it for a long time. I've got a finance degree from Louisville. I'm using that to the best of my abilities. I do a lot of work with the Independence Bowl. It's a bowl game here in Shreveport that has ACC ties. So, of course, they're all excited about the possibility of Louisville coming to Shreveport for the Independence Bowl. For selfish reasons, I would love that more than anything, but as a fan and as a former player, I do not want them to come into the Independence Bowl. I'd rather them go to a higher-level bowl game. But I do work with them. I've been doing work with them for, you know, the last couple of years as a, you know, volunteer board member, and I help out with their Independence Bowl. Actually, it's the Duck Commander Independence Bowl now. Let me get that right.
That's right.
Dynasty guys have attached their name to it.
That's
so,
right.
So I help out with their radio show once the college football season starts. And it's a great organization. It's locally run. The game has been going on for over 35 years now, which is rare in today's bowl landscape. So we're trying to keep that going in the right direction. We've got Duck Dynasty guys trying to ride the wave with them, and we'll see how it goes. But, you know, just like you, I'm looking forward to this season. It's going to be a lot of fun, and can't wait for it to get started. I can't believe it's going to be just really a few short weeks before camp starts, and then we'll be all watching on Labor Day.
Absolutely, and hopefully it's the Sugar Bowl. Hopefully you can go a little bit further.
Yeah, absolutely. That is an easy drive for me.
Absolutely. I think all Card fans would love to really live that New Orleans Sugar Bowl experience from a couple of years ago. Art,
absolutely.
I can't thank you enough for your time today. It was a great story. So we'll have to do it again. And if you're ever in town, definitely hit me up and let me know.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it, Mark. Have a good one.
All right, that'll do it for us. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of the Crunch Zone Podcast. Thank you to Rocco Gasparo, UofL Football SID, Mike Lindsay. That was a great conversation. And thank you again to Art Carmody. We'll be back 2 weeks from now from Greensboro, North Carolina. I'll be back from Greensboro at that point with flush with all sorts of audio from that. Who knows what I'm going to come back with, but I know it's going to be interesting. I know you're going to want to catch it. Thank you so much. If you can catch us on any platform, iTunes, thecrunchzone.com, Stitcher Radio, any sort of podcasting service that you use, we appreciate every listen. Of course, on Louisville.am, and we'll look forward to catching you guys next week. Football is going to get ramped up, and so is a 2014-15 season. Go Cards.
Louisville first, Cards forever. I promise to rep the veal and nothing.